Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. To find out more about the endowment and its programs, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour focuses on outstanding government executives who are changing the way government does business. Our special guest tonight is Bonnie Tischler, Assistant Commissioner for Office of Field Operations at the U.S. Customs Service. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
And joining me in our interview tonight is Craig Petron, also of PwC. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, Paul.
Well, Bonnie, let's start out by finding more about the Customs Service. Could you tell us about its overall mission?
The U.S. Customs Service really is charged with protecting our borders, so that cargo or persons crossing our borders, either entering or leaving the U.S., have to deal with U.S. Customs. And we are there basically as the front line, so to speak. We walk a very fine line between facilitation of cargo and people coming into the U.S. and our law enforcement responsibilities. We have a complex mission and includes enforcing over 60 laws for about 600 laws, for about 40 different agencies. And it's really a soup to nuts agency. We do it all. The laws that we enforce are our own in terms of the trade laws, and then we enforce laws for things like, for instance, the Food and Drug Administration, agriculture, the Drug Enforcement Administration. And so we have a plethora of activities that we participate in.
Can you tell us more about the role of the Office of Field Operations and how its mission works at the U.S. Customs?
Sure. I think one could say that the Office of Field Operations is what most people perceive as mainstream customs. I have approximately 13,000 people who work for me and $1.2 billion budget. And these people are actually on the front lines, 7,500 inspectors, more or less. These are the people you see, our folk in blue, when you come into the country. We have import specialists that handle our commercial cargo. We have our customs enforcement officers that are basically canine handlers, and other assorted folk who participate in that particular mission.
Tell us about your own career and the various positions you've held at Customs.
Well, actually, I had a really unusual career to wind up in the Office of Field Operations. I started with Customs in 1971 as a Customs Security Officer, or as most people remember it, as a Sky Marshal. In other words, I was hired to ride airplanes and keep them safe from hijackers. And I was hired in 1971 just as the government changed their attitude towards women in law enforcement. Prior to an executive order in January of 71, women could not carry weapons in the federal service. And so it was changed by executive order, and then Customs actually was the first federal agency to hire women in that capacity. Following my Sky Marshal stint, I stayed with Customs as an EEO officer. I did EEO investigations, but very briefly, and then I became a special agent, which is a criminal investigator position. And I stayed within that realm all the way really until this year. So I was a working level criminal investigator. My specialties turned out to be money laundering and narcotics. I was eventually assigned to something called Operation Greenback in Miami, Florida, which was the first anti-money laundering project ever in 1980. Customs and IRS and the Justice Department came together to, in fact, start this project. And really, the work that we did was a precursor to the Money Laundering Act in 1986. So that was very satisfying. And then I came up to headquarters and I became a branch chief and then a division director in financial investigations and later in smuggling. And then in 1988, I became the first female special agent in charge any place when I went to Tampa, Florida, which was at that point our second largest office. And I was there for 7 years, enjoying the west coast of Florida. And then became the special agent in charge in Miami for 2 years before I came up to headquarters in 1997 as the assistant commissioner for the Office of Investigations. So I'm really quite privileged to be able to straddle both sides of what Customs does, essentially.
What it sounds like you've spent most of your career in public service, and a question that comes to mind for me is what drew you to the public service arena at the beginning of your career?
I'd like to say altruism, but actually I was just looking for a job. I started out, I graduated in broadcast communications in the prehistory of, no, actually it was just the late 60s, and really nobody wanted a woman. And so I eventually, after a stint in New York at an advertising agency, I came down to Washington and I went to work on Capitol Hill for the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee in their public affairs division. And I really liked it, but I really liked being on the Hill. I liked the push and the shove. And then I left the committee and to become a sky marshal. So I really got quite the view of Capitol Hill and was very taken by being that close to history, I guess you might say. I was attracted to the federal sector in terms of that sky marshal job just because it was an adventurous thing to do and it was non-traditional for a woman. And I had met somebody at a cocktail party, actually, who recruited me. And I just thought, for a 26-year-old kid, that it would be just a great opportunity to see the world. So I didn't have altruistic motives, really, when I came into customs. But after, I didn't even know the sky marshals were part of customs. But I think I was there like 3 months, and you can't help becoming involved in customs and being absorbed into the family, because it really is like a big family. And the work we do, we have, it's a cause and effect relationship. I mean, we do the work, we see the results, and I think that's a really terrific thing to be involved in.
What were some of the more challenging leadership positions you've held, and why?
Well, actually, all of them. And the biggest challenge, as far as I was concerned, was getting through the glass ceiling. I mean, that's very bandied about, and probably in this day, right now, it's not as true as it was in the 80s. But when I became a special agent in charge and had to go out on my own to manage an office for the very first time in a state like Florida, which their entire law enforcement community, the sheriffs and the chiefs, were all male, and I knew they hadn't encountered anybody who was a female in their upper-level management or their command staffs. And so I just sort of landed on their shores. But I was really lucky. I grew up in Florida, and I went to the University of Florida, and so they treated me like a Florida girl, and that was very helpful. So the initial challenge was just being able to communicate with males in law enforcement and get my agency's mission accomplished. We were very successful at that. After that, I think after you've been in the government for a while in a managerial position like I have, and I've been in doing management really since about 1984, it's really turned into a personnel and resource management job. I mean, I wish that it was operational. When I was in the field and we were doing operations or investigations or things were happening, still in all, the heaviest responsibility was how to manage the people and the money. So that really is the biggest challenge.
I guess you may have answered part of this, but it sounds like you have it in your, you know, several leadership positions. What qualities do you think are key to being a good leadership in government today?
I think you need credibility. I really think that everything spins off credibility. I'm not that much of a touchy-feely manager. I mean, I came up in a command and control kind of atmosphere, and but I do believe in participatory management. And so it matters to me, I mean, it doesn't matter to me whether I'm popular or not with the troops, but it does matter to me if I have their respect and that they follow what I ask them to do because they believe in me and they believe in the mission. I think an apocryphal story was when I first came into headquarters and took over a smuggling division. I took over something called tactical enforcement. It was all of our old patrol function, and one of the patrol officers, who was retired military, actually came to me and said, "I want you to know, ma'am, you have my undying loyalty." And I thought at the time, you just cannot fork over loyalty. You can immediately fork over respect, and I think that's what everybody expects. But loyalty is something that you have to earn, and you can only earn that if you're a credible manager.
It's time for a break. We'll be right back with more of the Business of Government Hour.